When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAP sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked board-certified plastic surgeons. From tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond, every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Cha-ching! That's the sound of Lowe's Labor Day savings. Get up to 45% off select major appliances and save up to an additional $100 on select laundry pairs. Plus, get 3 bags of Miracle-Gro 0.75 cubic foot garden soil for just $10. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's. In-store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for more details. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Welcome back to Pass Gas, everybody. It's part 2 of Alfa Romeo. We're just going to get right into it. The company was in dire straits last time we talked, but now they're going to try to turn things around.
And things become great for them, and they start designing beautiful sports cars that drive down the autostradale like supermodels down the runway.
A lot of supermodel talk in this
one. Yeah, euphemisms out the butt.
Emphasis on soup. Model.
Nice.
Dear Benjamin, please forgive me, because I know what I'm doing is the best thing for you. My father is so upset, you've got to understand. I love you, but it would never work out.
With those words, the starting gun was fired on one of the most iconic movie sequences ever. The Graduate was the highest-grossing film of 1967, starring Dustin Hoffman and featuring a scene-stealing performance by a hot young newcomer, the 1966 Alfa Romeo Spider Duetto. Upon discovering the love of his life has skipped town, Hoffman springs into his red roadster and thrashes down California's Pacific Coast Highway. The scene is soundtracked equally by Simon and Garfunkel's Mrs. Robinson and the roar of the Spider's twin-cam four-cylinder engine. Alfa Romeo was at the top of its game in the 1960s. 5 decades later, its legacy endures. Top Gear's Jeremy Clarkson said it best, "You cannot be a petrol head unless you've owned an Alfa." And most petrol heads would agree. There is no better way to dramatically pursue the love of your life than in an Alfa Romeo. Today on Pass Gas, how did Alfa emerge from such a volatile first 4 decades? What is Alfa's enduring legacy that keeps us talking about them? And where's the company now?
Are you a petrol head, Bart?
I've not owned an Alfa. Not for Jeremy Clarkson.
Well, I have to take away your card then. No. I have to snip your card up.
I kind of want to get one at some point, though.
I think it'd be fun. They're cool.
You can find them cheap around here, too, if you're willing to do the work.
Yeah. Welcome to Pass Gas, everybody. My name is Nolan Sykes. Joined this week, across from me, Bart Bidlingmeyer returns the show.
Thanks for it's been a long week. I've missed you guys since the last episode.
You haven't washed your shirt.
No, this is I only that. Own one shirt.
Yeah,
so I wash it every day.
And next to me, as always, Joe Weber.
What's up? I smell like a baby right now. You smell like milk and a baby.
How's the fatherhood going?
It's hopefully getting better this week. He's turning 8 weeks tomorrow, which everyone is like, "Oh, you're going through it right now, but you're gonna, you know, it's gonna get easier."
More weeks.
he's really cute. That's the only saving grace. Is, I'm getting 4 hours of sleep a night. I shouldn't have gone and played baseball yesterday. That's for sure.
You got to take care of your mental health, though, Joe. That's for you.
That's true. That's good. I'm so sore though. I was sprinting. You know, it's crazy when you play baseball. You go years without sprinting, and then you're playing baseball and you're sprinting all the time, and it's like, of course.
Remember you tore your, was it your hamstring or you pulled it? Remember, this was before we worked together.
It might have been like the first season I played.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had an ace bandage because I was also dealing with some aging injuries.
Yeah. Oh, that is true.
Yeah. Yeah. You like pulled up short, and I was like, I got you.
Yeah.
How did you guys meet?
Comedy?
Yeah.
James?
I think through James, but it was also like, you know, because we had played baseball
This was like 2014. Before,
yeah. And then
dang.
Ran into each other at like a UCB party or something. Nice. And you didn't have a hat on, and I'd only seen you in a baseball hat.
Oh, really?
And you're like, hey. And I'm like, I don't, I think this guy thinks I'm someone else. And you're like, it's me, Joe. And I'm like, oh, okay. Because like, I didn't know anybody in LA. Yeah. So I was like, how in God's name would he know me?
But, dang, yeah. You guys are at a UCB party 2014.
Yeah. You're a trainer in a gym.
Yeah, I worked at Equinox in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
Oh, so. Early.
Equinox.
Mm-hmm. I was still not at Equinox, but I was still training out of Beverly Hills on my way to Donut.
That's right.
In the morning on bike. That.
Whoa.
In 2014, I had just turned 21 and was going to bars.
You were wearing that vest and fedora.
That was for one wedding. But yes, it's true.
Can we get that?
Yeah, a picture of that? Back? It's on my Instagram, I think. That wedding was the first time we had like purchased alcohol to like go like BYOB, right? And we got like a case of beers and then like a thing of like cheap cognac. And my buddy Ed was like hitting the cognac all wedding. And then we just see him. We're like at this big like, you know, table with all of our friends and stuff. And we see Ed.
Was there no like booze at the wedding?
No, we had to bring your own. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, we were told just dicks about that.
Man, BYOB wedding. That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, we like, we definitely stole some ice that was going to be used for probably important food needs.
Well, it's for the ice like, bucket
you guys are getting hammered and somebody's did, like, why is this shrimp so warm?
And then it comes time for the classic ice bucket challenge.
Oh, yeah.
And end of the wedding.
It's just empty.
That was around the time for the ice bucket 2014. Challenge. Yeah. I wanted to do a dirt bucket challenge. I thought it was like a waste of water. And then my mom was like, don't dump dirt on your head in the backyard. No, and I was like, you're probably right, Mom.
Yeah.
And then I just
I got to support ALS somehow.
Yeah. Anyway, this is part two of Alfa Romeo. Last week, we talked about some really crazy engines, a 5-time supercharged V12. World War II happened. They're at Ugo...
Savoci.
Was it Savoci got shot? It was Gambato or something.
Oh, Ugo Gambato or something.
Gambato. Like he's one of Mussolini's buddies. He got hired by Mussolini to take over the company. He gets shot outside of the factory in 1945 for cozying up
he's
to Mussolini.
He's basically the Louis DeJoy of Mussolini. Sent into, you know, tear down the postal service from the inside out.
For sure. So that's great. Now let's see what happens next. At the conclusion of part one, Alfa Romeo was clawing its way out of the destruction caused by World War II, manufacturing ovens and irons and fidget spinners, while its new workforce of discharged war veterans rebuilt the Portello factory. The company's next steps were crucial in this moment. And those decisions fell to brilliant and passionate Sata Puliga. Like a dad left in charge of dinner for the kids, he checked the fridge for leftovers. And what he found was a feast.
Dino nuggets.
In 1946, Sata reintroduced the 6C2500, the final road car Alfa had produced before the war. Its existence was a, quote, minor miracle, largely tabbed together from pre-1940 parts hoards. This reheated version of a dual overhead cam, 2.5-liter straight-six engine, designed by Vittorio Jano. This wasn't just any road car, though. Nicknamed the Feccia d'Oro, or Golden Arrow, this was a road car fit for a king, literally. This Feccia d'Oro was so expensive at the time, only 680 were produced and sold to the likes of Kings Farouk of Egypt, the princes of Pakistan and Monaco, and movie stars like Rita Hayworth and Tyrone Power. Another exclusive model was produced in 1949, the Villa d'Este, which won that year's Concorso d'Eleganza, the most prestigious car show in Italy. A slightly less expensive version was built in 1952, and a total of 2,800 cars were sold. The resurrection of the 6C put Alfa back on the map, but a consumer base composed almost entirely of royalty was hardly a sustainable business model. In human terms, Alfa had been doing some hard living, and it was time to settle down. Sata understood this and made a significant decision for the future of the business. Sata knew that for Alfa to survive, it needed a quality, affordable car for middle-class consumers, so he designed the 1900. The car was an inoffensive sedan at first glance, but Sata's first design of the post-war era changed everything for Alfa, and the car was the foundation on which the company built its next era of greatness. In 1952, the 1900 represents several firsts for Alfa in its pursuit of stability. It was the first Alfa to be constructed on an assembly line, the first to have a monocoque chassis, the first to have a monocoque load-bearing body structure, and the first to possess left-side steering. Hello, America. The elegant saloon car could sit up to six people, but equipped with a new 1.9-liter dual-cam four-cylinder engine that made a respectable 90 horsepower, it was still quick and sporty.
So there was bench seats on the front and back?
I guess so. That's what it sounds like, huh? Another point of emphasis from Sata was drivability. The 1900 was meant for regular driving, not just sports racing petrol heads of the car community.
Community. That's the new vernacular.
This combination of characteristics proved to be a hit with Italian families and inexperienced drivers. Sport variations of the car were produced for racing, like the 1900 Ti and Super, and the car's success in the Targa Florio, Stella Alpina, and other races inspired its sales slogan, quote, "The family car that wins races." They were even adopted by the Italian state police and nicknamed Panthers.
We're just going to give it this completely different name.
With the 1900, Alfa Romeo went from being a car maker that only assembled luxury models at an almost artisanal level to a brand that produced its products industrially. Before the 1900, workers at the Portello plant spent an average of 240 hours building each car and had never assembled over 1,000 cars in a year. By 1955, they were down to 100 hours per car and assembling 6,000 on the year. It was business 101, guys. Lower production costs means lower vehicle prices, which means a greater number of potential buyers and potentially higher profits.
The art of the deal.
That's the art of the deal. Anyone who worried that Alfa had settled down and retired its innovative edge needn't have to for long.
It's parody in the sentence. Worried is the verb, is the past tense, so they needn't have to worry for long.
Thank you.
It is tricky because it's past tense. Worried that Alfa needn't have to be for long is how probably what I would say.
Yeah.
Anyone who worried that Alfa had settled down and retired its innovative edge needn't have to be for long.
That's how I was missing that. Right? Yes. It's not that I can't read. Although, ironically, its latest creation would be all curves. Sata and designer Carlo Chitti, I know that name, likely inspired by the alien movie craze of 1950s America, collaborated with coach builder Carrozzeria Touring to design the C-52 Disco Volante. Translation, Flying Saucer.
Oh, this is cool.
Their main emphasis was on aerodynamics, and it showed. There's not a straight line in sight on the first model, which looked like it was right out of the Jetsons, which wouldn't air for another 10 years. That's how ahead of the curve this thing was. The open roadster body sat practically on top of the car, partially covering the wheels, and inspired the design for the iconic Jaguar E-Type a decade later.
Oh, I do see those similarities.
Intended for racing, engineers bore the size of the Disco's four-cylinder engine to 1,997 cc, ending up with 158 brake horsepower.
That's good.
Not bad. However, only five were ever built, and none touched the racetrack. The four surviving units all reside in museums.
It belongs in a museum, Chewy.
C-52 Disco Volante. Oh, baby.
Did you do that back at Purdue?
No, James used to go, get off my plane, Chewy.
Damn, this thing is so sick. Yeah, you can really see how the E-Type kind of was inspired by this.
And yeah.
By inspired, I mean, it's pretty freaking close, especially that rear end. Ooh-wee.
Ooh-wee.
Ooh-wee. Feel it in the air. That's really good. That's a nice looking car. Man, I bet that was...
You know, Snoop Dogg got paid $500,000 a day to be at the Olympics and just be himself.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot to read this last line. With the 1900 and the Disco, it seemed Alfa had finally figured out how to deliver on both the sizzle and the steak.
The steak usually sizzles, though.
The steak, I know, but you can be all sizzle, no steak.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you ever get one of those like $3 steaks from Dollar General.
Yeah.
What?
It just makes you sick.
Do not eat the steak at Dollar General.
Sometimes you gotta, though.
Sometimes you gotta.
Because Nolan drank all the ice. The steaks went bad.
Hey, let's talk about something a lot of us deal with. Thinning hair or hair loss. If that sounds familiar, CAPS has solutions. Their hair restoration treatments are personalized, designed to strengthen your existing hair, encourage regrowth, and improve scalp health. The providers at CAPS guide you every step of the way with advanced treatments for noticeable, long-lasting results. And when you book your first hair restoration appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread or a fully loaded bagel. And the only thing you'll think is delicious. You won't think it's up to 19 grams of protein, but it is. You wouldn't believe it has 11 to 32 grams of fiber, but it does. Hero Bread makes loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with taste, but without all the net carbs. We're talking 0 to 5 grams net carbs per serving. With Hero Bread, there are no compromises, just flavor. There's none of the stiff baked goods you expect from better-for-you brands. There's just the soft, fluffy bread you crave. Plus, small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the popular 2-gram net carb Hero Croissant and the 3-gram net carb Hero Pain au Chocolat. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code IHEART at checkout. That's code IHEART at hero.co. All figures per serving of Hero Bread see nutrition facts on hero.co.
These alphas raced hard, too. 1950 marked the inaugural season of the F1 World Championship, and the new vehicle guidelines seemed fine-tuned for Alfa's 158 Alfetta to excel. With its narrow tires, supple suspension, superior brakes, and a 1.5-liter supercharged straight-eight engine tuned to make 420 horsepower, they were engineered to conquer the Italian Alps. Alfa drivers Giuseppe Nino Farina, Juan Manuel Fangio, and Luigi Fagioli.
Fagioli. That means bean.
conquered the first F1 season. They conquered the first F1 season in Alfetta's.
And actually, Farina means like flour.
Oh.
So it's like flour and bean.
That sounds like a really expensive restaurant in Culver City.
Yeah, Farina e Fagioli.
Flour and bean.
Flour and bean.
Cook and plow. That's how you know your neighborhood's gentrifying when restaurants open up that are just two nouns.
Well, I have a theory. That is on its way out. That was the millennial.
Oh, it's got to. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's saturated. Everything is like, you know.
There's only so many words. They used all of them.
But now the new thing is cutesy sayings.
Mm-hmm.
Highly likely. Mm-hmm. There's two bars right next to each other called like, I met her at a bar and I met him at a bar.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that. Yeah. And then everything's written in like the Cooper font.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that's the very new thing.
Very specific. Yeah. Yeah.
But so we're not taking ourselves too seriously.
No. Yeah.
You know, come on.
I love jewel tones. I pay attention to that kind of stuff.
So these cars, Fangio and Flower and Bean over there. They took first, second, and third place, respectively. The Alfetta won every race in which it competed that season, which becomes even more impressive, Bart, considering that the car originated in 1938 and had barely been modified outside of that engine.
It's pretty cool. Thanks for driving that home.
You're welcome.
We didn't even talk about Fangio. Fangio was like a huge deal at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We talked to Horacio Pagani during Car Week last week. The reason that he was able to secure a job at Ferrari is because Fangio Fangio wrote him a letter of recommendation.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's super cool.
Dude, this 158 Alfetta looks sick. Yeah. I love these Grand Prix cars from this era.
Yeah.
They look awesome. For the 1951 season, Fangio leapfrogged Farina to win the Drivers' Championship, this time in a 159 Alfetta, which was supercharged even further and could hit speeds of 190 miles per hour, gentlemen.
God dang.
I say gosh dang. That's really fast. Although the increased power meant decreased fuel economy to the tune of 1.2 miles per gallon.
I thought it said 12 at first. I was like, that's low.
And it is.
The cost
of that.
Yeah.
The cost of fuel was just one small slice of a very expensive pie. And to the dismay of many racing fans, although perhaps not Ferrari fans, Alfa pulled out of F1 after its back-to-back championships. For context, the financially motivated departure came before the company had hit its stride with the 1900. The defending champ Fangio would go on to win the Drivers' Championship in 1954, 55, 56, and 57 with several different constructors, and his total of five would be the record for 46 years until Michael Schumacher won his sixth in 2003.
Damn. You know, German, Schumacher is German for shoemaker.
I deduce that. A driver can't be in two cars at once, and Alfa's racing aspirations had to park it for a while so that the business could get revved up. We're a car show.
Yeah, we're car guys. We only use car references. It's our wheelhouse.
In 1952, while the 1900 was showing that Alfa was capable of mass-producing cars, it still had a number of technical issues. Not a surprise for the company's first vehicle off the assembly line, but now Alfa had to prove it could keep customers satisfied and not just exhilarated.
Yeah, it's a sustained, it's like a meth high they're going for.
Sure.
Not a heroin high.
Oh. The 1900
Thanks,
rolled.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, now I get it. Now I get it. The 1900 rolled so the Giulietta could absolutely rev. Car show. The Alfa team, still led by Sada, sought to improve upon the characteristics of the 1900 that made it a success. The Giulietta would be smaller, less expensive, and simple construction. It was primed for mass production. There was just one problem, guys. They were low on cash. We're all
you rip
pulling
your
our
shirt off. Oh, even more awkward.
Pulling out of F1 had stopped the bleeding, but the 1900 was only 2 years into its run, and Alfa was just breaking even. But someone had a tricky idea. In order to generate the revenue needed for Giulietta's development and tooling, Alfa conducted what was, in essence, a lottery. Italian customers were invited to buy interest-bearing company bonds with the promise that 200 of them, chosen by random drawing, would receive brand new Giuliettas when production got underway. It was something straight out of Carlo and the Chocolata Fabrica. The lottery was a huge success and raised enough funds to get things moving. But of course, this was Alfa, and they couldn't resist the temptation to create something livelier than just another family car. Development inevitably fell behind schedule, specifically the body design, and a year later, there was no sign.
I think it would be Fabrica di Cioccolato,
yeah,
as opposed to Cioccolato Fabrica.
Marco il Fabrica
Charlie
di Cioccolato.
Carli
Carlo.
Il Fabrica di Cioccolato.
Yeah, and you
Carlo.
Have to use more hands when you
Carlo
say it.
Il oh, Fabrica,
you know what?
Carlo il Fabrica di Cioccolato.
That's great.
That's great.
Thanks.
Wow.
Wait, so... factory would be the feminine version and cioccolato would be masculine? I thought it'd be switched.
D, I don't think is gendered.
Charlie è la fabbrica di cioccolato.
That's perfect.
Charlie è la fabbrica di cioccolato.
Charlie è la fabbrica di cioccolato.
That's great.
It's great.
Grazie.
By Roald Dahl.
yeah. Roldaldo.
Ronaldo Daldo.
So there's still no sign of the Giulietta. The problem was, instead of a few impatient bosses or board members, Alfa had thousands of angry Italians beginning to think they'd been scammed. Desperate to have something to show for their work, designers decided a custom sports car body wrapped around sedan mechanicals might deflect attention away from the shortage of cars. The Bertone designed 2x2 coupe with a twin cam, 1290 cubic centimeter inline four, finally debuted at the 1954 Turin Motor Show. The public response turned from jeers to cheers so hard it gave the Alfa team whiplash.
Car show.
Car show.
Car show, guys.
So many models were pre-ordered that the car had to be rushed into production with the first 1,000 built by hand since the assembly line hadn't even been set up yet.
Whoa. Yeah, they should probably do that first.
Yeah.
Next time.
Well, they were so behind the car, though. They hadn't even built, like, a prototype, yeah. Let alone an assembly line.
Yeah.
Alpha Brass were caught off guard, but they shouldn't have been. The economy was booming a decade after the war. Middle class and young single people were eager to hit the road. And once they realized that they had a hit on their hands, they leaned in only as Italians can. 2 weeks ahead of the launch, a preview was organized in the courtyard of the Portillo plant in Milan for industry insiders and critics. As part of the preview, two actors jumped out of a helicopter dressed as Romeo and Juliet.
And sadly fell to their deaths.
Yeah, this is before parachutes.
The cars were so popular that they were practically driven straight off the factory floor, and it was nicknamed Italy's Sweetheart, since it was the first Alfa to have a woman's name. This is when ride or dies for the company started to be known as Alfistas, a term that lives on today. There are Alfista internet forums and clubs all around the world. Half of them reside at Deus. In 1961, the Giulietta became the first Alfa Romeo to sell over 100,000 units, and to celebrate the milestone, a huge party was thrown with actress Giulietta Masina as the guest of honor.
What a great, you know, random happenstance to be a guest of honor just because of your name.
I know.
It's like if the Dodge rolled out the 1,000 horsepower Nolan.
Yeah.
And then you get to go out there.
That'd be cool.
Or if the Simpsons threw like a 40th anniversary party and they're like, your name's
there's
Bart.
This guy.
Yeah. This thing's like a cute little car.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Matt Groening's there like,
eat my shorts, man.
Oh.
Don't have a cow.
Bart is actually designed after Matt Groening's likeness.
With the launch of the 1900 and Giulietta, Alfa Romeo sales from 1951 to 57 had increased by 187%, ensuring the salvation of the company.
Nice. And they murdered their competition.
They almost
get it?
Doubled.
187?
Oh, yeah.
187.
187 on a mother Fiat. I'm sorry, your kids
are you're on a roll this week with parody raps.
Rolling, you should think about doing that. You should make a parody rap episode.
You should immediately monetize your hobby.
Yeah. Monetize that passion. Monetize everything. Rolling into the 1960s on commercial and critical highs, Alfa engineers and designers seemed to have extended job security for the first time in company history. This peace of mind led to the most culturally significant decade in the company's history.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAP sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked, board-certified plastic surgeons. From tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond, every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread or a fully loaded bagel, and the only thing you'll think is delicious. You won't think it's up to 19 grams of protein, but it is. You wouldn't believe it has 11 to 32 grams of fiber, but it does. Hero Bread makes loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with taste but without all the net carbs. We're talking 0 to 5 grams net carbs per serving. With Hero Bread, there are no compromises, just flavor. There's none of the stiff baked goods you expect from better-for-you brands. There's just the soft, fluffy bread you crave. Plus, small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the popular 2-gram net carb Hero croissant and the 3-gram net carb Hero pan au chocolat. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code IHEART at checkout. That's code IHEART at hero.co. All figures per serving of Hero Bread see nutrition facts on hero.co.
This section's called The Car Guy Years.
Oh, well, so it's this is
aimed we're going to if you didn't like it up to this point,
you're going
to
like
you're
going
to love this part.
Yeah.
For car guys.
Buckle up
like us.
Car show.
Buckle up, but only if you want to buckle up, cuz it's bullshit we have to. Us car guys.
I went to swap out so the sensor on my, you know, for the airbag through the belt. Mm-hmm. First of all, why do you need a sensor for the airbag if you're driving?
I don't know why it ever turns off.
I'm driving.
Yeah.
The car's moving. The driver's side airbag should be engaged, right? Anyway, so I had to replace the belt, but, you know, sometimes parts say that they'll fit and they won't.
Yeah.
So then I was like, okay, it's not you know, reading. And so I tried fumbling with the connector and swapping out the electrical.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, nothing was working. Mm-hmm. So I have to get a new seatbelt.
Oh.
And it hasn't arrived. And so I was like, what am I going to? Yeah. So I stick the seatbelt in the center console. So I'm all wrapped up. So
that's it.
I know. And every time I do it, I'm like,
it's just, I mean, it's just keeping that ticket away at this point.
Well, and I also, but it's like, I'm so used to doing it. I felt weird not having
it. Oh, it's super weird when you don't. So. Yeah.
That's funny. The 30s were the golden age of alphas screaming past opponents on the racetrack, but many of the most enduringly iconic alpha models came out of the 1960s.
Oh, and if any cop hears that, I drive a white car.
Yeah.
A white cop car.
I drive a... No! It's not a... It's a white SUV.
Yes.
If any police are looking for me, that's what I drive.
Yep. Yep. And I can certify that. Yeah. Alpha got off to a great start in large part thanks to a young prodigy working at Grupo Bottoni named Giorgetto Giugiaro.
Giorgetto Giugiaro.
Yeah.
Giugiaro.
We haven't talked about him in a while, but he would go on to be the designer of the century.
Frank Stallone.
He designed 7 models for Alpha from 1960 to 68. And over the next 50 years, he would style cars for nearly every auto manufacturer in the world, including the Lotus Esprit, the Volkswagen Golf and Scirocco, the Bugatti EB112, the Saab 9000, Subaru SVX, and the DeLorean DMC12. In 1999, he was named the car designer of the century. Having Giugiaro on Team Alpha was like when the Red Sox had Babe Ruth on their team in the 1910s, something we all remember dearly.
That's
not a good, also not a good euphemism, because he was known as a Yankee. He actually cursed the Red Sox until 2004.
The curse of the Babe, the Bambino.
When Johnny Damon helped break that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember when I
grew up outside of Boston.
Yeah, you're a Red Sox head.
When they won, and it still didn't feel real. It was just very funny because it's like it's such a weird feeling, and they got the last out.
Yep.
And for, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes, I'm just like, how is this getting called back? And it's just,
oh, wow.
Okay, they did.
Yeah.
It's just that weird process to go through.
So that's all to say, it's better to say that Babe Ruth was a Yankee.
I see.
And
that's how we got it.
Gotcha. Alpha was the Yankees.
But I think he's trying to say, like, when Babe Ruth was a Red Sox,
he was in
before he went everywhere else.
Yes.
So Alpha had Giugiaro. Giugiaro before anybody else.
Yeah,
and it was when his career.
They took an L by trading him to another team.
Yes.
Okay.
The key driver in the conference room was Giuseppe Luraghi. Luraghi had began working at Alfa in 1951. He worked closely with Sata and was promoted to chairman in 1960. In addition to being an effective business leader, Luraghi was a published novelist and a poet.
Oh.
Made him perfectly suited to preserve and advance the romantic spirit of the company. Luraghi recognized that despite the continued commercial success of the Giulietta, innovation was essential for Alfa's continued long-term success. Just a year after Alfa began exporting cars to the U.S., they set out to design a car that, quote, challenged conventions and revolutionized design. The result was the 1962 Giulia, a four-door compact executive car intended to replace the Giulietta. Tested in a wind tunnel, it had an aerodynamic coefficient of 0.34, far lower than its European saloon contemporaries, like the BMW 2000 Ti and the Fiat 124. So, I mean, 0.34 is pretty good. I think Priuses now are like 0.29, 0.28.
They always reference the Model S as being like 0.23. nice. Yeah, and then the other thing they always reference is that a Jeep Wrangler is less aerodynamic than a lobster.
Wow.
And it's like 0.6 or something.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So the Giulia was considered a, quote, jewel of design, mechanics, and passenger safety, and sold under the slogan, quote, the Giulia,
a car designed by Wind. Powered by a 1.6-liter twin-cam inline-four making 91 horsepower, it was the first in a trend of lightweight but powerful sedans. The sleek and powerful Giulia breathed new life into Alfa's oldest flame. It was time to get back on the track. In 1963, Alfa Romeo brought back one of its own for another lap. Engineer Carlo Chitti began his career in Alfa's experimental department in the early 50s, where he experimented with a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he kissed a guy.
then was hired away by Ferrari to be chief engineer until he and Enzo's headbutting became untenable. He was described as, quote, hot-tempered yet kindly, determined yet soft-hearted. Characteristics that could be applied to Alfa cars, although the similarities stopped at appearances. While elegant beauty is the hallmark of Alfa models, Chitti was, quote, portly and soberly underdressed.
Overdressed.
Oh, shit.
either one's not good. Yeah. If you're soberly underdressed, that's pretty bad.
Soberly overdressed, often in a raincoat, no matter the weather. His Auto Delta
team. You never know it's going to rain.
The Auto Delta team became the official competition department of Alfa Romeo, 23 years since their last independent competition department had disbanded with the departure of Ferrari and his Scuderia. His stable. Auto Delta's first order of business was to fit the Giulia for racing, and mamma mia, did they ever.
Anybody else want Olive Garden?
You know, they changed their breadsticks.
Two? They're made out of bread?
No, they're actually worse now.
They're wheat are they bread. Bad? I can't believe they can get away with doing that.
Yeah.
Auto Delta.
You know, you can get breadsticks to go. They have a whole page dedicated to what kind of sandwiches to make with your breadstick to go.
I took some home. Mm-hmm. I've only been once, and it was like last year for my friend's birthday. Mm-hmm. He was like, dress up in a tuxedo. We're going to go to Olive Garden for my birthday. It'll be fun. And it sucked. It sucked so bad. But I was like, the salad, I do like the salad because I like any generic salad with canned olives and, you know, generic ranch. Mm-hmm. I took a breadstick home, and it was, like, inedible an hour and a half later.
Oh, you can't. You have to eat it within 5 minutes of table delivery.
Yeah. Well, the trick is you got to put it under water. Yeah. You got to soak it in water really and dry. Throw it in your oven for a second.
The GTAM version of the Giulia for the 1966 season had wider plastic fenders to fit its beefy 10-by-13-inch alloy wheels that they had borrowed from the Alfa Tipo 33 endurance car.
Those are big wheels.
This souped-up Giulia absolutely dominated in competition, whether they were in stock races, rallies, or hill climbs.
You guys know where they get the term souped up, right?
The cocktail of pills they feed the horses.
Yeah, they used to put it in soup. They put amphetamines in soup to give to the horses.
I thought it was because you could get unlimited soup and salad.
Oh,
it's because when you leave Olive Garden, you're at your absolute best.
Souped up.
So someone thinks you must have just gone to Olive Garden and gotten really souped up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The car won 6 of 7 European touring car championships between 66 and 72. The Giulia was like an elite athlete who happened to be gorgeous, like Gordon
Nolan
Hayward.
Sykes.
Or I was going to say.
Like any of the track
like
team.
Literally any athlete that you see on television.
I don't know, dude.
They're beautiful people.
Chris Middleton on the Bucks.
Why is Chris Middleton taking shots over it? What the heck?
I think he's a great athlete. I'll just say that.
The next car Alfa produced was a straight-up supermodel, though. inspired by the Porsche 904 GTS.
You know what I like? I like when we talk about cars in sexist language. Yeah. That's one of my favorite things about being a car guy.
We're car guys. We're single track minded, you know?
Man, this is like 15 years ago when it was like everything was like the car's got hips and an attitude like a feisty redhead. You're like, what are you talking about? You've never talked to a feisty redhead.
I know.
You write blogs on the internet. What are you talking about? Anyway. That's my
opinion. And that's when Porsche decided to go topless.
Inspired by the Porsche 904 GTS, he saw winning the 64 Targo Florio, Alfa designer Franco Scaglione began working on a mid-engine 2-liter sports prototype that would become the Tipo 33 Stradale, one of the most beautiful and iconic cars ever made. I love this car.
And on a side note, if you ever meet somebody named Franco Scaglione, he's either there to design a kick-ass car or break your legs.
Yeah, yeah, that's. This is one of the best looking cars.
I'm Frankel from Waste Management. I gotta talk to you about something.
I was hoping you were the one from Alpha.
This car was half the weight and had half the engine capacity of its frequent competition, the Lamborghini Miura, but it was just as fast. Did sub 6 seconds to 60 and over 160 miles per hour on Italy's Autostrada. The engine was a howling 2-liter, 32-valve, flat plane V8 in the middle of the car with an early fuel injection system. It had twin spark plugs and four coils and made between 230 and 240 brake horsepower at 9,000 RPM.
Man, that's sick.
Yeah, there is variation in the output because every Stradale was hand-built alongside the race cars over an extended period of time. And only 18 of these little rascals.
There's variation because some days they had unlimited breadsticks and salad when they were making it, and they took an extra hour siesta.
You had to soak it in bread. Prior to working at Alfa, Scaglione had spent years working as a sketch artist for the great Italian fashion houses. He then took the principles that make clothes look flattering, like silhouette and volume, and applied them to covering the fixed points of the racing chassis. The Stradale was a masterpiece because it perfectly balanced several contradictory characteristics, which I will now list. It was subtle, but aggressive. Lightweight, but not delicate. A piece of high art, its beauty could have felt intimidating, but it was warm and endearing instead. The price tag, on the other hand, would leave all but a very few elite shaking at the cash register. It was the most expensive car being sold in public in 1967 at $17,000, which translates to about 160 grand today.
That's still, less than a 911.
Yeah. I'd rather have this.
Yeah.
Oh, babe. I probably couldn't fit one of these things, now that I think about it.
You'd have to get the shack.
The shack upgrade, yeah, the big roof.
Add a foot to the wheelbase.
Did they do that?
They did it to his Gallardo.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he has an extra long Gallardo, or maybe Murcielago.
That's kind of sick.
Yeah.
So far this decade, Alfa had produced an athlete and a supermodel. The final car to complete the iconic trilogy was a movie.
I thought the supermodel was the athlete.
Well, no.
The first one was an attractive athlete.
Yes.
Then came the supermodel.
Yeah.
All right.
But even the supermodel was an athlete, too. Yeah. So let's just say that was the...
Let's just get going.
Yeah. Leave the metaphors.
They needed a movie star. The Giulia Spider was immensely popular and a staple of Alfa Romeo production in the late 50s and 60s. But the Duetto Spider, introduced at the Geneva Motor Show in 66... ably took its place. The body was designed by Pininfarina and was the very last project associated with founder Battista Pininfarina before he died.
That's a sick name. Battista? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
After the ultimate success of the Giulia Lottery, Alfa came up with another marketing idea to engage the public, announcing a contest in Quattro Route magazine to name the new car. Thousands of Alfistas mailed in their ideas, and the winner was Duetto, referring to the car's two camshafts, two carburetors, and... two seats. However, controversy arose when an Italian candy company that made a chocolate called the Duetto claimed they had exclusive rights to use the name.
That candy is called the Twix in the U.S.
Oh, is it really?
No, I wouldn't. Because there's two of them.
That's pretty cool.
After some snickers or laughs at the office, Alfa officially changed the name.
Not Snickers.
Not the bar.
The candy bar.
That's a one pack. Alfa officially changed the name to the 1600 Spider. Unofficially, the chocolates lost the race, as the car is commonly referred to as the Duetto to this day. Another name the car is often associated with is Mrs. Robinson.
Charlie e la fabbrica di cioccolato.
In 1967 America, Alfa Romeo was admired mostly from afar. The brand was known for its dominant stretches in European racing and its stunning luxury cars, but it had produced only a few models with left-side steering, and the already expensive exports were heavily taxed, as Alfa had virtually no dealership network in the U.S. But all that changed with The Graduate, in which Dustin Hoffman's character roars around SoCal in his red Series 1 Spider, crossing serious boundaries, which led to the Spider crossing the pond in a serious way. The film was a sensation, and so was the Duetto, which became one of the most popular sports cars of all time and was produced all the way into the mid-90s. The best-selling version was the Series 2, which featured several innovations. It was the first Alpha designed with a roofline that tapered downward towards the car's rear before being cut off abruptly, aka a camback. It was also the first production vehicle to have a variable valve timing system like VTEC. Alpha even came out with a graduate edition trim to celebrate the movie's 20-year anniversary.
Maybe that's why it sounds so cool in that scene where it's, you know, revving super high. Yeah. That's
VTEC. He's going to his stepmom's house.
Isn't he going to the church?
I don't know.
At the end there, he's going to the church to stop the wedding.
I'm just saying, with that VTEC, he's going to his stepdad's house to hang out.
I think I only know the...
It was just some girl's mom. Oh, there was no...
I'm just saying, VTEC stereotypes here is what I'm going off. Okay. I'm making honks.
I didn't know what...
He's got a straight... He's got a big old, like, straight pipe exhaust on it. Fart can. He's got a hybrid racing shifter in there.
I only know... I don't think I've ever seen The Graduate, but I have seen actually Wayne's World.
Well, The Graduate is the movie that Fast and Furious is based off of.
So, for Alpha, the 60s were a decade-long cruise up the California coast with the top down, peace and love, baby. The 70s, though, were back to the real world, for better or for worse. In 1971, a project that Alpha Brass had been talking about since the 50s finally came to fruition when a new plant was opened in southern Italy just outside of Naples. This was excellent timing for Alpha on the heels of Italy's hot autumn. A series of over 400 worker strikes across northern Italy protesting pay and labor conditions, which significantly disrupted factory work and industrial centers. And as a result, worker emigration from southern Italy skidded to a halt.
Car guys. Car talk.
The first car produced by the Naples plant was a small family car appropriately named the Alfa Sud, which literally translated to Alfa South. The Sud had a 1.2-liter four-cylinder boxer engine, which gave the car a low center of gravity, which made for excellent balance and handling. The engine's low positioning also allowed for the design of a two-volume, four-door, five-seater, ensuring a low bonnet that continued on with sleek, sporty lines, yet simultaneously offering a surprising amount of interior space, more than average. In fact, once again, Alpha had struck the perfect balance of high performance and design merged with drivability and practicality. It was the belle of the ball in its debut at the 1971 Turin Car Exhibition, and the pre-orders rolled in. Alpha was prepared for the orders this time, but there were some other unexpected bumps in the road. First,
speed bumps.
First was a move that would have made Alpha's founding fathers roll in their graves. They experimented with using recycled steel for the body, which proved to be inferior and had propensity to rust. The salty air, due to the plant's location just a few miles from the Bay of Naples, didn't help. And the second problem was the repercussions of this work-from-home idea. Here's the thing in southern Italy, which I am very qualified to talk about. It's one of the most beautiful places in the world. It's the 33 Stradale of places. It's the, what was that athlete that you're talking about? The
Gordon Hayward?
It's the Gordon Hayward of places.
That's missing the... You don't find Gordon.
Oh, Chris Middleton.
It's the Chris Middleton of places.
It's beautiful.
It's not Chris Middleton.
It's the Anna Kournikova.
Okay.
Why don't we stop objectifying anybody on this
planet? Sunshine and land are as abundant as olives and tomatoes. The South isn't nearly as industrialized as the North, and South Italians traditionally live a much more agrarian lifestyle that revolves around being outside and interacting with nature. So, production slowed a little bit. Alfa Romeo had planned to start production of the Alfa Sud at 500 cars a day, ramping up to 1,000. The Naples plant averaged 70. Oh, man. It was like watching Buddy the Elf trying to build toys in the North Pole.
Wow.
The plan was for 175,000 Alfa Suds to be ready to roll when it was launched on the day, but there were less than 80,000. All of these issues resulted in the Italian government, which still owned Alfa Romeo, losing 25 lire for every Alfa Sud sold. There was a significant downshift on innovation after that. Car guy. And for the rest of the 70s, Alpha went with today's Hollywood strategy of rebooting old favorites like the Giulietta and Alfetta. And for some reason,
well, they're doing
Twister.
Yeah. I was gonna say though, Alpha's doing it, it's working now.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Carlo Chidi and his Auto Delta squad were still tinkering away in their garage up north, and in 1974, he unleashed a variant of the Tipo 33, the 33 TT12 racer. TT stood for
Tubulare.
Thank you.
I think it's IO. Telaio Tubulare.
Referring to its tubular chassis. Tubes! The car was an absolute weapon, equipped with a Chidi design 3-liter flat 12-cylinder engine that produced 500 brake horsepower.
Sheesh.
Good Lord. The TT scored a hat trick at Alfa's hometown race, the Monza 1000 kilometer, placing 1-2-3 and finishing in second place overall and then in the 1974 World Sports Car Championship. But that was just an appetizer. An antipasto.
That was a little antipasto. That's a little arancini.
Alfa won the long-coveted constructors' title in the 1975 World Championship, winning 7 of the 8 races it entered. A delicious primi... What?
Primi Plati.
A delicious Primi Plati, led by driver Arturo Mesario. The tubular car also won the Targa Florio for good measure. The TT took a little smoke break in 1976, then returned for the Seconda Corsa in 1977 as a 33 SC12 SC for Scatolato or box chassis.
Whoa.
To win all 8 races it entered, taking home its second Constructors World Championship.
I wonder if that has like etymology shared with like scaffolding or...
From then on, Alfa struggled to consistently keep up with its contemporaries, releasing a string of obsolete and outdated models. There were some bright spots. The Alfa GTV6 won an unprecedented 4 consecutive European Touring Car Championships starting in 82. In 85, Alfa celebrated its 75th anniversary by debuting a new sedan named the 75. It was commercially successful, but Alfa's finances were still in the red due to mostly to high production costs. And in 1986, the IRI, which had owned Alfa since 1932, sold the company to Fiat.
That's the Italian governmental... agency or something?
I assume so. Fiat was interested in emerging technologies, and the Alfa Romeo 164 was designed with computer-aided technology. The boxy car looked like something you drive on Super Nintendo, but it also came equipped with one of the best-looking V6 engines ever, the Busso, after engineer Giuseppe
IRI,
Busso.
The IRI is Istituto per la Ricostruzione Industriale.
Okay. The 1992...
The post-war reconstruction.
Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. The 1992 155 was Alfa's first front-wheel drive car, to the ire of the Alfistas. I do not like a front-wheel. It was successful as a racing car, but it didn't sell well as a production car, or barely at all. Alfa sold less than 699 cars in the U.S. in 1994, and the company stopped exporting cars across the pond in 1995. Today, Alfa sells 3 models in the U.S. A lot more in Europe, but we're American.
And they're all good. Everybody likes them.
They sound cool. Great.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching the reboot of Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and I think there's an episode where they go to Italy and drive one.
Oh, yeah.
And it
didn't
sounds
really
cool.
Like that car or that show.
It's too...
It's probably for someone who likes good things, Nolan.
Oh, that's the problem.
Like Alfa owners.
Yeah. Speaking of Alfa owners, no, that's not a thing.
Alfistas.
Speaking of
Man,
Alfistas.
You can't throw a rock in LA without hitting 10 Alfistas.
Alfa is still a brand of car that I would like to own one day.
Yeah.
I think also the
race car roots are still very much alive.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't think that exists everywhere.
No.
And the same thing, and their design.
Yeah.
And they've just shifted, I think, a bit more to driver experience.
I think I would love to own Giulia, like a modern Giulia as well.
Yeah,
really good.
It is like, if I had $1 million to spend, I would love to get my hands on a, you know, older one, a 60s one.
The 33 Stradale.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally unobtainium
yeah,
right now.
I know. We got some listener mail. I will read it because I stole Joe's laptop. Hello. Hey, guys. Thank you so much for being my number one go-to for podcasts. I always look for a new episode of The Big Three and Past Gas. Thank you very much. I've been working on my family's 2009 Subaru Outback, and we are going to get a paint job. Do you guys have any color suggestions? I was thinking about a Gulf type livery with the front bumper orange and the body being powder blue. Thank you for always being great information and entertainment wherever I go. From Zachary. Thank you, Zachary. I don't know if I would have if I would paint my family car in the Gulf livery, unless you were all big time racing fans.
We did see F-150 or a Ranger or something. It was a Ford Lightning, kind of like pre-runner style up at Car Week that was painted in this livery.
I think I've seen that one in L.A.
And it looked kind of sick. At first, we were like, what the heck's going on that over there?
I think the Gulf livery is cool. I think you also, as much as white cars kind of suck, if you put a big red Pegasus on it, it's pretty kick-ass.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Hell yeah, dude. Okay, well, hope that helped you out there a little bit, Zachary. You got a whole spectrum of opinions from us. All right, well, that's going to do it for us this week. If you'd like to hit us up on an email, hit us up at passgas@donormedia.com or P.O. Box 84.
Inglewood, California, 90306.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that is that. 90301. 90306? 90301.
That's what it says in the PassGas channel.
Well, thank you so much, Bart. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, guys. I always have fun.
Yeah. Hit us up at Bid, or hit Bart up at Bids Bardo. Follow Joe at Joe G. Weber. Follow me at Owen J. Sykes. Big thanks to the crew, Edgar Grajeda behind the camera, Audrey Holden, and Gavin Kinzel. And our writer this week, it's
Sam Clemmer.
Sam Clemmer.
Looking for your next thrifting experience? Check out the new Goodwill Columbus location in Westerville. Our new store is full of the latest secondhand selections with options rotating daily. From warm weather clothes to home decor, you may find your new favorite items just in time for spring. Each purchase helps us create opportunities throughout Central Ohio. It's shopping that looks good, feels good, and does good. Come shop at 60 East Schrock Road or learn more at goodwillcolumbus.org.
Hey, let's talk about something a lot of us deal with, thinning hair or hair loss. If that sounds familiar, CAPS has solutions. Their hair restoration treatments are personalized, designed to strengthen your existing hair, encourage regrowth, and improve scalp health. The providers at CAPS guide you every step of the way with advanced treatments for noticeable, long-lasting results. And when you book your first hair restoration appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.